Hi, this is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called Everything You Need to Do If You Think Your Child Has a Learning Disability. We all want our kids to be perfect, so when something's not quite right, it hurts. Sometimes it can hurt so much we deny there's even a problem. But as parents, our kids need us to be their anchors and our advocates. We're the ones who can detect a problem early and give them a fighting chance to overcome it. So in this interview with Karen Schlitz, clinical psychologist and author of Beyond the Label, A Guide to Unlocking a Child's Educational Potential, you'll hear the red flags to look for with your kids, the steps you should take if you suspect there's a problem, and how to take any hurt and fear you might be feeling and turn it into something positive for your child. You'll also hear the three things you absolutely must keep track of if you suspect your child has a problem. You'll hear a quick story and a shocking statistic that shows why it's so important to catch reading problems early. You'll also hear the one place you should go first to rule out anything else before you jump to the learning disability conclusion. You'll hear a simple checklist for social cues to look out for that should tell you something's wrong and how therapists usually treat these problems. You'll hear about the miracles that can happen when you build a bridge with your child's teacher and how to do it. The longer you wait to seek help, the larger the problem will become. When kids become frustrated with their disabilities, they can start acting out, or worse, their self-esteem could plummet. But it doesn't have to be that way. There's tons of help and support out there for you. And in this audio interview, you'll hear how to start finding it. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Senoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Today we are talking with Dr. Karen Schlitz. Dr. Schlitz, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You've written a really comprehensive book on basically dealing with the challenges of having a child that has educational and learning difficulties. Beyond the Label is what it's called, A Guide to Unlocking a Child's Educational Potential. And one of the things you talk about that really stands out is that early intervention with these kids is so important if a parent suspects that there are problems or a teacher suspects. And I just want to ask you to start off, why is early intervention so important?
Oh, and that's key. That's key to helping children improve with respect to learning and thinking abilities. You know, we really want to get these kids young because it'll save money over time. And also, children get very frustrated as they age if they have problems with thinking, reasoning, and learning. For example, children that have trouble with reading, when they're about 3 to 7 years old, children of that age, they show delay in speaking. They may have problems recalling the names of letters, problems identifying the sounds of letters. They may have difficulty understanding that words can be broken down into syllables. And around kindergarten, when a child is 5.5 to 6 years old, these children who are at risk for reading problems will have trouble decoding, in other words, reading very simple words. So a child's progress in kindergarten is critical, and a child should be able to crack the code. I really understand sound symbol relationships by the end of kindergarten. In fact, if the child is not naming the letters of the alphabet, and I mean upper and lower case, and is not aware that words come apart and letters represent those sounds, and is not even decoding simple words by the end of kindergarten, those are flags that indicate that the child is at risk for a reading disorder. And it's at that time in kindergarten and first grade that we want to get in there and help these children read. We know, for example, 95% of children who are helped in kindergarten before second grade can get better. And they can be at their peers' reading level. After second grade, what happens is time goes on. There's more reading that's required. The children that have problems with reading will get worse over time and will not get better. So it's really unfortunate when I have parents come in and they have a 16, 17-year-old teenager who has problems reading. And typically these children will just feel miserable. They're sad, they're anxious, they're frustrated, which brings on more problems. So had the parents intervened, helped the child when he was in kindergarten and in grade one, we wouldn't see the mounting anxiety and frustration. And what happens is the reading problems then is not the only problem. These children get anxious and depressed, and you're looking at a more intensive intervention plan, and that all costs money. Meanwhile, the family goes through much frustration themselves, and there can be a tug of war, and parents just feeling miserable as well. So if we get these kids early on, we can really help them so the little problems don't get to be very big problems as children age.
I would think that a lot of these reading and a lot of these learning difficulties turn into much greater than just academic problems, that you get into self-esteem and acting out. Have you seen that kind of thing with kids?
Oh, yes, absolutely. These are flags, and the flags is what parents need to really pay attention to, and grandparents, whoever the caretakers are with that child, and teachers. A flag is a sign that something is not quite right.
Can you tell us some of those flags? What do parents and teachers need to look out for? I mean, are there a lot of them that we can see if we're watching?
Yes. It'll not be just one flag. For example, social problems. For kids that are 3 years old to 7 years old, if they have difficulty socializing with their peer group, they're going to be observers. I call them observers. They're going to be on the periphery of a group looking in. These are kids that prefer to play alone rather than others, and they tend to seek out others who have the same interests as they do. These kids may have trouble going back and forth. You know, the give and take of a conversation is really important to sustain our conversation with others. As they age from 6 to 18 years old, if these kids have social problems, they will tend to have difficulty reading faces, understanding the emotions and words that kids use. They are typically lonely, very sad, very anxious, and lonely, and cannot keep friends. They may initially make a friend if that child's into what they are into, for example, video games. But what will happen is they'll have difficulty sustaining that relationship, and they'll withdraw. They'll start withdrawing from others. So it's really, really sad how these little problems can really explode into bigger issues. So we really have to be mindful of these children early on in their life. If they have problems with reasoning or achievement and emotional areas, so we can really nip it in the bud.
And what kind of things do you do, or what do therapists do with kids like that where they are struggling? What kind of therapies are available?
Well, there's all types of things. What's really important is that the child receive an evaluation, and there's different types of evaluations a child can go through. First, though, the parents are really the anchor point, I have to say. Parents really know in their gut if something's not quite right, if something is a little off. Parents are always correct in that, and I have to say that throughout the years. I've been doing this 25 years, and parents will say, this is really bothering me. I don't know what it's called, but it's not quite right. Well, that gets my attention, because they're giving me flags. They're giving me the warning signs that something is a little bit off. And there are three things that parents need to be mindful of before an evaluation even occurs. Number one is frequency. How often is their child exhibiting the behavior? For example, social problems or difficulties reading. Is it occurring in many, many different contexts? Is it severe? For example, we can all have problems with attention and concentration, but it may not affect our work and play. But if a child is having trouble with attention and concentration and it's rather significant, they are the ones in elementary school that are going to have a real problem listening to a teacher in a class they don't particularly care about. They're going to have problems handing in their work on time. They're going to be losing papers. Their backpack is going to be a mess. They'll be losing things around the home. So I'm looking at the severity. The third thing is we're looking at pervasiveness. And what that means is that behavior occurring in more than one situation? So for the child who has difficulties with planning and organizational skills and seems to be leaving a trail behind them throughout the day, okay, the parents will be picking up their things and we're reminding them and we'll be structuring and prompting them, and so will the teacher. So that's a real problem. That's going to affect the child's learning and their ability to access the curriculum in their classroom and even show what they know on a test. So the frequency, intensity, and pervasiveness is absolutely critical to be aware of. And if those three conditions are met, then the parents really need to pay a visit to their pediatrician.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
I think that the pediatrician's the first stop. People won't generally come in to see a neuropsychologist immediately unless they've heard about us through word of mouth. But even so, I had a case the other week that came in, and it was a little 8-year-old girl. The parents were talking about their concerns, and they told me that their daughter had not had a physical for 2 years. And I looked at them and I said, you know, let's do that first. I would feel better if you go back to the pediatrician because I want to make sure her vision is fine and her hearing is fine. Because it may be she can't see the board and that's why she's having attention problems. Sure enough, they went to see the doctor and she needed glasses. So that was a problem easily solved. So she didn't need the evaluation. It's just that this little girl could not see the board and was fiddling with things and was squirming in her chair. So we have to get the basics covered first. And oftentimes medical difficulties can masquerade as problems with thinking and even as problems emotionally. So that's really important. And parents will find if they open up to their pediatrician on what's really bothering them about their child, the pediatrician should help guide them in the right direction concerning what evaluation to start off with first. So I think that's really important that parents be aware that this pediatrician is really the gateway to obtaining the right evaluation.
And then what do parents do, the ones that you've seen, because you've done this, like you said, for a long time now, the kids that end up being successful and getting through despite these difficulties that they may have, what do those parents and teachers do that's different, per se, from the kids that end up getting in trouble with authorities or failing? Do you see any threads there?
That's a great question. Yes. Number one, the parents. As I mentioned before, the parents are the anchor point for children. Parents have to be involved. No one else can do it. Parents are critical, absolutely critical. They have to be involved with the intervention. For example, a child who has reading problems may need to see a reading specialist, and there will be strategies that the parents need help with at school, and there needs to be teacher involvement. Everyone works together as a team, and that's really neat. When I work with kids, as far as assessment, I'm always on teams. We never are alone. Not one person can do everything. So we all work together. And through our unique specialties, we're really able to help the child. But I notice when the parents are consistent with bringing their children to the intervention sessions and doing what the specialists tell them to do, these kids get better. There's no question. If the parents don't make the intervention a priority, whatever intervention the child has to be in, for example, speech language pathology, psychology, occupational therapy, what have you, if the parents are not actively involved in helping the child and having the child consistently attend these appointments, the children will really have a hard time and they're not going to get better as quick. So parent involvement is absolutely critical. The consistency in which the child attends sessions is important as well. The second thing is parents really need to build a bridge with the school system, meaning the teachers. The teachers are really the point person for the child in elementary school. And the teachers are, again, absolutely necessary and critical for intervention to be successful. Oftentimes, for example, if you have a child with social problems and they're having difficulty making and keeping a friend, a speech-language pathologist will be one of the core interventions to help these children learn strategies to improve. But they'll also want these strategies to be generalized to the school environment, such as during recess and during lunch. And oftentimes we can have a shadow or a teacher who is willing to help the child learn these strategies and implement them in real time. And that's what makes the intervention so successful. So between the teachers and the parents, we've got these children all covered, and it's the generalization of the strategies that they learn from their specialists I'm interested in the direct application in real life time. So it's really important all of us work together for the benefit of the child.
And making sure you find support, because it's not an easy thing to help a child that's struggling, I would imagine.
Yeah, so that's another good point. We all want our children to be perfect. We want it. And when something's not quite right, it hurts. And mothers and fathers, I see it every day, they hurt. It's very, very painful. As a matter of fact, some parents hurt so much they don't get help. And they deny that a difficulty is happening. You know, it's very sad. And parents need to reach out when something isn't quite right. And actually talk to other parents. Talk to the teacher. The teacher will act in the child's best interest. Talk to them to get more information. Because what a teacher sees in the classroom can be very different to what a parent sees at home. So the classroom environment is really going to be the field that reading problems occur in first, problems of attention and concentration, because it's a work environment. Home is not a work environment, except during homework time. And the problems are really going to be taxed, they're really going to be hit on in the classroom. So, again, it's hard. This is very, very painful, and there's so much pain and a loss that a parent feels. They may hear about things that they don't like to hear. It's just really, really hard, but parents need the support, and they are the advocate. They are the chief advocate, the chief anchor point for the child. So I encourage people to seek out help for themselves, talk to other parents who understand what they're going through. And there's all types of support groups I know we have in California to help parents.
And Dr. Schiltz, we just want to thank you so much today for joining us. And parents, a good start is check out Beyond the Label, a guide to unlocking a child's educational potential, because it really is just full of information and we barely scratched the surface today. So I hope we can have you back and really get into more in depth on some of these issues, like how to deal with the schools and how to support your child in a learning environment. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
That's the end of our interview. I hope you found this helpful. For more great interviews on health, wellness, business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.